Do you have a sledgehammer?
I do not.
Outstanding. Welcome to Mustard Mayonnaise. I'm Matt.
I'm Richard.
And this is probably the earliest we've ever recorded one of these things.
8:02 in the morning.
Oh, Lord. We discuss things in the entertainment industry that capture our interest. Movies, TV, DVD, video games, bit of computer stuff.
Random stuff.
That's correct. And we missed last week. Didn't we miss last week?
We missed last week, and of course, I still haven't published
the other one,
so it's been a while.
It has. And we're going to miss next week, because I'm going to be in Portland.
Really? What are you doing in Portland?
There's a Champ Car race.
Oh, yeah?
And I really could give a rip about Champ Car.
Yeah, but still kind of fun.
But, you know, my...
It's like mini indie racing.
My car nut buddies were like, hey, you want to go? And since there's a group of people going, and since I never actually do anything like that, it's like I'm making myself do it for the experience of saying, you know, it will be fun, even though I really don't care. It's, you know, oh, that person won. Okay, whatever. So that'll be fun. That's what
it
I'm
is.
Doing
it's
next
like,
weekend.
It's like mini Indy racing, which is like mini Formula One racing.
Yeah.
So it's like Formula One 2 removed.
Okay. I see where you're going with that. And, of course, I'm dealing with trying to sell my house, and oh my god, what a time sink that is.
I can imagine.
So, I actually saw it. We saw Knocked Up yesterday.
Yeah, I saw it too on Friday.
What did you think?
I loved it. I thought it was great.
I quite liked it, but I went in with too high expectations, quite frankly, because I expected so little from the 40-year-old virgin. And was so blown away by how much I laughed at that movie.
Well, I had heard good things about The 40-Year-Old Virgin, so it kind of met my expectations. I was still blown away. But Knocked Up, there was good old Dave Poland there to completely deflate whatever expectations just before I went, that it ended up vastly exceeding them. So
you
should have read Dave Poland beforehand, and that would have
clearly
been perfect.
I thought it was a really good film. I thought it was very funny. I thought, you know, the one blurb I read on Hollywood Elsewhere, which I think, and he himself was cribbing from somebody else's review, was that it was, you know, I may be going out on a limb here, but it's almost an instant classic, but it's got a lot of heart. You know, it's very honest about the things it's discussing in terms of, you know, relationships and being a slacker and being a weirdo and how all these things fit together. And I really felt that the film was really, you know, honest with itself.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the big thing that Jeff Wells can't get over, and I, you know, is the fact that this totally hot chick, Katherine Heigl, would in any way be attracted to Seth Rogen's character.
I don't know. It just didn't even bother me for a second. The way they had them meet, it seemed he's not unattractive. He's kind of big and goofy.
Yeah,
but he's very amusing, and the way they set it up seemed. It in no way stuck in my mind.
I totally see both sides of this argument because, I mean, he's a stoner. He's got no job. He's been living off some accident money that he got 10 years ago.
Are we talking about the initial attraction or the ongoing?
No, but, I mean, well, it's
the initial one is
things.
Part of the story, and then the ongoing.
Well, the initial thing is that she gets completely hammered.
Yeah, so the initial one, I could agree more for the ongoing one because he... Because it is his what he's doing is his life is uniquely pathetic, but it is a comedy.
But he's fairly honest about it. He's not trying to lie. And he is charming. And you know, my take on that is, you know what? There are girls, doesn't matter what they look like, that are okay with a goofy, unemployed, pot smoking guy.
Yeah, you know, that said, but somebody who's like a producer and later an on air host for E, people are the types of people that absolutely are constantly jumping to the top, moving ahead in their little
right.
B world. So it was so that particular type of person I couldn't see. But that said, didn't bother me in the least.
No, I mean it's just one of those you have to get in order to enjoy the movie, you have to accept it. You have to suspend your disbelief enough to get over that. And then, you know, it's fine. And it got to, and they really, like, I never watch E, so I'm coming at it from never having seen it, but Alan Tudyk, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, actually, mm-hmm. who played her boss, the executive, mm-hmm. and that other passive-aggressive chick, which was hysterical,
yep.
and how everything out of her mouth was basically, you're an idiot, and I can't believe we're doing this, and was brilliantly written.
Yep. Well, the whole movie was brilliantly written. I think if I had an issue with the movie, it would be that it was extremely episodic, and it really felt like a movie, which is my understanding, this may be the case, but it felt like a movie that they filmed a lot and they spent a long time just cutting it down to the funniest core, and possibly removed stuff in it because it slowed it down a little, but it was like all one scene they're somewhat broken up. Another scene, there wasn't much of a transition. They're just moving into kind of making up again, and it was extremely funny, but you got the sense that they were cutting stuff out. And I read that article about Judge Apatow in the New York Times magazine. And this is a guy who's sort of famous for being so hating executives, so hating everything. He was the one that wrote the incredible memo to Fox that was so awful for canceling his show Freaks and Geeks, or maybe it was Undeclared, that it was rescued in time, I think, by apparently a like his agent. It was like this death. It was like this end of his career memo, excoriating them for canceling his thing. And he never would listen. If they ever put any notes or gave him any notes of a series, he would immediately do the exact opposite. So in this movie here, he really sat down and listened to audiences and test screenings and started trimming away jokes and cutting this and that. And so it's like kind of like a whole new Judge Apatow. My sense is, though, that there was, I don't know, it just felt like it went along at a really brisk pace, but in terms of actual linear narrative, it almost seemed like there was some gaps there. It was just,
I don't know what you're saying.
But that said, that made nothing to me. I'd give it an A, and I laughed my ass off through the whole movie. It was extremely funny. I didn't laugh as hard as I did at The 40-Year-Old Virgin, but I think part of that was because there was like this 70-year-old couple next to me, and I was highly aware that they weren't finding it quite as amusing as I was.
Well, it's hard to imagine a 70-year-old couple actively choosing to see a film called Knocked Up.
maybe 60 years old. And they seemed like a hip 60-year-old, okay. But they didn't. They just plain weren't laughing that much, and I became conscious of how much I was laughing.
Well, and my wife was telling me as we were discussing it afterwards, she's like, clearly there was a great deal of guy humor, because you were laughing at exactly the points these other guys in the theater were laughing at, and I could kind of see the humor, but I didn't really get it.
Yep.
So clearly there was a lot of guy male, like to me when Seth Rogen and Paul Rudd are sort of bonding over dinner and like the whole Doc Brown thing, and he's like, it's like, why don't you, and then one of the snotty wife says, why don't you two guys just F each other? And they're like,
yep.
I could totally do it too. He's hot. And and how it's like, you can totally see yourself having that conversation with some guy, and the wife and the girlfriend just looking at each like, what the hell are they doing? Anyway, that to me was very male humor.
I'll tell you, 40-Year-Old Virgin had my favorite line in the whole thing was complete throwaway, stupid line. They had this running gag about that kind of domineering lady that ran the fake Best Buy store, and she was totally into Michael McDonald, so she kept playing all his videos. And at one point,
it was the one concert
and Paul Rudd apparently just got really mad at one time, and he was saying something about how much he likes Michael McDonald, but if he hears Ya Mo Be There one more time, and when he brought up Ya Mo Be There, I just die laughing, because it's like it's a throwaway line, but it was so funny to me because that's the stupidest name for a song. So anyway, in this movie, my favorite thing, the thing I laughed hardest, was just another throwaway. They had the running gag of the guy that they're betting that's gonna keep his hair growing and his beard growing
won't shave or cut his hair for a year, pay his rent.
And then, of course, the deal is they get to buck him the whole time. So at the very end of the movie, when they're sitting in the hospital waiting room, and the sister-in-law looks over at the guy and goes, who is that? And Paul Rudd goes, I think it's Modest Yahoo. That's that Hasidic rapper guy. And it was so damn funny when he said that. And I was the only guy laughing. I don't think a lot of people knew who it was in the theater, but I was dying. It was so funny. And everybody else is looking at me. But anyway, it was a funny movie, and I think it will be a rewarding experience to watch it again on DVD, because I'll bet there's a lot of jokes I missed.
You know, and as we were discussing, because, it's a sunny weekend, so we need to get out of the house so real estate agents can come and show our house.
Yep.
So we're essentially, banned from being in our house. And
being here.
What's that?
Hence you being here. Oh, no, that's later. You have to be kicked out.
Yeah. And so we're trying to figure, okay, I guess we'll see him. We can see a movie. And I was like, well, I guess we can go see Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah.
You know, that'll eat up 3 hours of our day.
Exactly.
And she wanted to see Knocked Up more, which is fine, because that's the film I wanted to see more. And I'd much rather my money go to Knocked Up than Pirates. But I was like, okay, it's going to be half as long, but all right. And so I still haven't seen it. My buddy John saw it when it opened. And I asked him, okay, what'd you think? And he said, I had some problems with the first couple hours. And you're like, when you hear that comment about a movie,
oh man,
that really sums it up. I mean, he did a brilliant job of summing it up. Yeah, there were some problems with the first couple hours, but it was okay in the end. It was,
It was okay.
So, my God. That's insane. Man. Then I get to work last week, and sort of the way my work team functions is we do a lot of communicating through Instant Messenger, partly because a lot of us are in the same room, and if we all started talking, it would be insane.
Yep.
Some of our bosses are in a different building. And the way we use Microsoft's Messenger, the Live Messenger, and the way it's set up, you can, next to your name, you can customize a little line of text. So you can say, I'm out, I'm at a doctor's appointment, or I'm in a good mood today, or something, whatever. I almost never do it because it's frivolous. But
you are not about frivolity.
I am. Most days I am not. Last week I actually was in the mood to say a shiny new donkey to anyone that procures Tabasco sauce.
Nice. That's really not necessarily frivolity, but obscure and random.
Yes, much like myself. Anyway, so one of my coworkers put up a line that said, it was something along the lines of, as long as there is one fool to believe in a quest, it's not foolish. And it was like, Captain Will Turner.
Oh, Christ.
And I was looking at that, I was like, what is that? And I kind of, is that like Master and Commander? And it took me like an hour or two, and I kind of glanced at that. I was like, oh my God, that's Pirates of the Caribbean. One of my coworkers is quoting Pirates of the Caribbean in their, made me so depressed.
He's a 12-year-old dork.
Actually, she's like a 36-year-old woman.
Oh, man, that's really bad.
It was so depressing. It was like, of all the things to quote, you're going to plunk a Pirates quote in there. You need to expand your... Okay.
Life is tough, Mr. Brown. Did you watch any previews before the movie yesterday?
Yeah, there was a Super Badass or whatever. Super Bad.
Looks very funny.
Got a lot of laughs. Was Seth Rogen one of the cops?
Yeah, the whole thing's written by Judge Apatow, and it's
Judd.
Like, Judd. I keep saying Judge like Judge Reinhold. Judd Apatow, and it's like and Rogen's producing it, and or something like that.
I saw their name, and I thought Rogen was one of the cops, but he looks like he's lost some weight.
He is,
and that Fu Manchu mustache kind of threw me.
Well, that's the one that IMDb, not IMDb, but Ain't It Cool News, and everybody's all like, Knocked Up, that's great, but the Super Bad, that's the movie to see. And of course, it's because it's designed for them. It's journeying back to adolescence and doing a movie. But anyway, it does look funny. And then they had Balls of Fire or whatever?
Hold on, they did have that joke that I loved. It was like, when girls go to a party and afterwards, like, they're all drunk, they're like, oh my God, we slept with these guys. What were we thinking? We can be those guys. We can be that mistake.
Exactly.
The Balls of Fury.
Balls of Fury, you were about to talk about.
That
very funny.
The Christopher Walken ultimate, set it up as like ultimate death fighting, but no, it's ping pong.
Ping pong.
Well, the release date must have been pushed because there were previews for that like 4, 5, 6 months ago.
I don't even remember it, but...
Like the big Lowe's theater at the mall had one of those gigantic vinyl banners in the front of the building for it a while ago.
I don't remember it, but the trailer was funny. And then I don't know if you, have you seen the Heartbreak Kid trailer yet?
No, what's looks that?
Very fun. Well, it's a.
I know nothing about
this
that.
This is a movie that was originally a Charles Grodin movie. I can't remember who directed it, but it was very funny and very famous movie from the 70s. And they've redone it's about a guy that basically finally agrees to get married, goes out with this girl, and almost instantly realizes that she's completely wrong for him on their honeymoon, but meets up with somebody else. And this is a remake of it with Ben Stiller and, what is her name, Bridget Monaghan. Unbelievably hot.
Moynihan.
And then there's this girl, I can't remember who the girl who plays his mistake wife. But anyway, very, very funny trailer. And so they had that, and then they also had the Evan Almighty.
Oh, yeah.
And nobody laughed in the theater at all during that trailer.
Well, there were some laughs. I mean, the problem is...
In mine, it was snickers and giggles and nothing. I think that movie is going to do cruddy, especially considering when marketing is factored into it, they're going to spend $250 million on this movie.
Yeah, it'll never make that much. It's just not. It doesn't look... From what I can tell, it doesn't look bad. It looks like an okay movie.
Yep.
But on the other hand, you look at the trailer and you see the entire here's the entire movie. They actually show the Ark in some sort of flood situation.
Yep. It looks like, oh, I don't know what's going on here. But the thing that really makes me mad about this movie is that, you know, when The Passion of the Christ came out, it so freaked everybody out in Hollywood that they immediately thought, oh my God, what we need to do is put some religious element into it and then hire company.
You mean they had a come to Jesus meeting?
Yeah. So then they hire that company that promoted them in churches and stuff, and that's what we're going to do. So you'll see movies like Rocky Balboa that all of a sudden has this little religious element, and then you'll hear about them promoting it in churches. Yeah. And this movie here so clearly was designed to be about religion, but not be offensive in any way, but to be the kind of thing that ultimately is going to support it. And of course, reading a couple articles last couple weeks, that, you know, they're talking about how they're going to promote this in churches and promote this and that. Here, thinking, I don't want that in my comedies. I want them to be irreverent. I don't care if they have a good uplifting meaning.
You know what?
But don't make it part of the writing process.
You know what I think of, though, is the how many conservative churches will even how many conservative churches will embrace a black God?
Mm-hmm.
Seriously.
Oh yeah. I think for the most part, when they sell these things, it's not even occurring to them that they recognize that there might be a problem, because most of them will, because they're not thinking of it. They're just thinking of, oh, Hollywood is finally embracing, you know, the reality. We know this is a fantasy, but this is what could be happening. And God, I mean, you know, I don't think they're even, I think if it was a reality based thing, you know, in other words, God is coming back and he's black, there might be rioting in the streets. But since it's a comedy, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm just tired of that whole thing. And let's face it, other than supposedly Chronicles of Narnia, at what point has this actually worked where it's become this factor in the bottom line of these movies?
Well, you know, there's probably a quote-unquote subculture of some of these things that we've never heard of that are either direct-to-video or released.
That's fine. But making it this active component of...
Oh, I agree.
Currently, I don't want it... I don't want any of that part of it, and it just makes me mad.
You know, you kind of send me off on a tangent here, but I was reading one of my lefty blogs the other day talking about the entrance of Fred Thompson into the Republican presidential race.
Yeah.
Fred Thompson, who, you know, he was a senator from Kentucky, a Republican senator from, I think it was, no, Tennessee.
Tennessee.
And, of course, is an actor. And, you know, I think he still is, like, that plays the DA on Law and Order.
No, he left that a couple of years ago.
A couple of years ago?
Yep. Yep.
Really?
Like in 2005.
Have I not seen Law and Order since then? Maybe not.
I don't know. But maybe I'm wrong, but I'm 99% sure he left it. He did that after he got out of the Senate, and then I'm pretty sure he left. I may be wrong.
I thought, whatever. The only thing I actually remember him in is from Hunt for Red October, when he was the admiral on the... I think he was the admiral as opposed to the captain of the carrier, but... this business will get out of control. It will get out of control and we'll be lucky to live through it. But anyway, the point this blogger makes is, you know, they always rail about the Hollywood liberal media and the lefty elites in Hollywood. But as soon as a Republican actor gets into the fray, you know, conservatives are all creaming themselves over him.
Yeah, of course.
Anyway, I just thought that was an interesting comment. Well,
the one difference between him is he started out as a politician, a lawyer. He was in the Nixon administration in a peripheral way that helped bring down the Nixon administration through the Watergate hearings. And he was in Tennessee politics. And how he got into acting is they're making that movie Marie, which is a very good movie with Sissy Spacek, about a woman who tries to reform the Texas parole board because she found out that the whole thing was corrupt. Basically, you could buy parole. And he was like an advisor in the movie, I think, and basically because he talked them into letting him play himself. Because he played basically Fred Thompson in the movie, who he was, and that was the start of his career. And he's very distinctive, but he started out not as an actor, but as a politician. So mm-hmm. It's a little bit different.
There's some really interesting points that the lefty blogs are making, but we'll see what happens.
Cool.
So
I don't know, for some reason, and I don't think it's because of the cancer, but Thompson, his hair is all short, and he looks really old, older than he did just a couple years ago.
I don't know, does he look worse than McCain physically, which is a horrible thing to say, but McCain looks like crap right now.
Actually, McCain, I don't know, they both look kind of bad, but Thompson looked really bad, to tell you the truth. I was like, wow, what happened to him in the last couple of years? And it might be because of the cancer remission. I don't know. And you'd be wondering how that affects people, you know, the thought that he's struggling with cancer. But I don't know.
So I got one more movie thing.
Sure.
And this is not news at all. It's just a comment. But a while ago, they made a big deal about how you could go on to some website. I think it was Yahoo Movies, and see like 9 minutes of Ratatouille, the next Pixar film.
Yep.
And it kind of got me think. I love Pixar films.
Yep.
Love them.
Yep.
This next one looks great. Patton Oswalt is the voice of the rat.
Yep.
I love them, and yet I have zero interest in seeing 9 minutes of the film.
Oh, yeah, I do too.
Because to
me, I
want to
see the movie.
Yeah,
I don't
exactly.
Want to see this.
I'll see a trailer. I'm totally fine with that. I'm conditioned to see trailers.
Yep.
But that's too much.
Yeah, it won't get me excited. It'll actually deflate the movie. I'll feel like I've seen some of it, and when the movie actually comes out, I'm like,
I don't want to be bored.
Yeah.
For 10% of a movie.
Yeah.
Like, because I've seen it before. I mean, if that's, you know, if they've done market research and they think that if people see this particular 9 minutes, they're X percent is more likely to see it, then, you know, okay. But to me, you're right. It has the opposite effect. I actively do not want to see 10 minutes of a movie. And that, I mean, there are other times when that happens, when they'll say the first 10 minutes of 28 Weeks Later is up on Ain't It Cool or something. I have no interest in that.
Yeah.
I don't want to see that big a chunk of a movie. I want to see the whole movie.
I agree.
Anyway, I just wanted to mention that.
Some guy got speaking of putting stuff up ahead of time, some guy got convicted. The first time I ever seen this, convicted of putting up episodes of 24 just a week before the season started, and he's gonna, or he's either got convicted and going to jail for 3 years or possibly going to jail for 3 years. But I've actually not heard of people being convicted and getting prison sentences yet for this. But he got like screener copies. You know, they send out the first four shows to press, and he put them up on some website called Live Journal or something.
Maybe it's because 24 is now the show the right loves because of all the torture. And
although I don't think this was the MPAA that was going after him. The RIA or whoever it is. But yeah, no, I agree. The right just
creaming
loves
over
it.
Jack Bauer. Oh, my God, if only we could torture everybody. Oh, my God, that would be
so awesome.
Funny,
when I first heard those stories about them, I thought, okay, well, this is funny because it's
so
obviously,
out there.
Yeah, it's so obviously stupid, and everybody knows that this is. And then I started realizing, no, people are taking this legitimately seriously and referencing the guy and inviting the producer to Hollywood. And I'm going, does anybody realize that torture as they're doing this doesn't work? We've known it doesn't work. It's stupid.
John McCain realizes it, but
I know, except for
it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Anyway, so they finally started burning off the last Studio 60 episodes.
Yeah.
They've broadcast two so far. I've only seen the first one because we've been so busy we haven't seen the second. First one was very
I thought it was awful.
Well, it didn't have Bradley Whitford or Matthew Perry in it.
Which I don't know why. Maybe they're just saving money or...
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's hard.
It was just weird.
I can come up with various reasons, but none of them make any sense. How could they be saving money? They can't be paid on a per episode basis. Well, they got to be paid for a whole season.
That's not necessarily true. They are paid on a they're paid for a season, but they're contracted often for X number of episodes. And if they
how could that contract have been written though at the beginning of the before the season even started? How could they possibly have said these are our two leads? And we're going to do, let's say, 22 episode bye. How can we only pay them for 21 or 18?
Here's my take. Here's my suggestion how it works out. When they're setting up a series, they have no idea what's going on. So they have to go think that there's a 70% likelihood it's going to be canceled. Realize that there's also a huge likelihood that you don't know what direction the series is going to take. Think of Family Ties. Family Ties was about these two hippie parents. Nobody thought it was going to be about Michael Keaton, and it took him about five episodes in to realize
Michael J. Fox.
Michael J. Fox, Alex Keaton. Sorry, I'm really on my game this morning. Nobody realized, and it ended up going directly after him. Nobody thought that other goofy show was going to be about Steve Urkel. So they don't know what's going on, and then they're trying to finance the show. And one of the ways they can do it is to say, okay, we have these stars. This star's big enough that we could only get him for a 3-year commitment if it gets picked up, this for a 7-year commitment. And to save money, we are offering this person $1 million an episode, but we're only guaranteeing, or we're only going to guarantee of the 22 seasons possibility
episodes.
That their episodes, they're only going to be in 18 shows or something. And then as the show clearly is in financial trouble, they start thinking, you know, and it's not doing well, let's put a show together since we don't have to have them in there and it will save us money for that show. Let's not put them in.
I totally see what you're saying. I just can't imagine that that's how they chose to finance it. That they could possibly save money by withholding the stars.
Not withholding. They just at a certain point, when they make that contract, they say, okay, Matthew Perry, we're asking for that you agree to absolutely do 22 shows. We're going to pay you a minimum, but we're only going to guarantee 18. But if we want to, we will have to pay you for those, but we don't have to have you in them and we don't have to pay you. That would be my assumption.
Okay.
Because otherwise, there's no reason for them to not be on that show. They definitely did not take him out and pay him.
Unless there was some, like, bizarre medical thing. I don't know what could have... They both had the horrible, horrible flu one day, but...
Well, and also, who else was not in that show? Amanda Peet was not in that show, and was what's his name?
Yeah,
The head of the... Head of the,
yeah, Weber was in it.
Okay,
He probably had the funny... He had one of the two funniest lines in the whole episode, yeah. Like... How is this okay with you? Something like that. I'm extraordinarily drunk.
Yep. Well, needless to say, the whole show was really forced. It was.
Well, I mean, or another somewhat plausible. I mean, and part of it is you don't know where in the process it was filmed. Yep. Like maybe you don't know if they'd already known they were pretty much done for by this point, or if they still thought they had a lease on life.
Yep.
Maybe it was a concerted effort to beef up the other characters.
It could be. There was actually that
to me is the more viable, but it's still bizarre.
Well, I'm trying to remember the show, but I don't think there was a single bit of ongoing plot in that show, or was it a completely independent show? Was that show something that could have plopped down anywhere in the series?
No, it.
In other words, was there
no
the
because
plot?
There was discussions of the head funny chick whose name I can't remember her relationship
Perry.
With Matthew Perry.
Okay,
and that relationship wouldn't make the comments
okay,
wouldn't make
so
sense.
So there was some okay, because other than that, I didn't remember much about ongoing stuff. Now the latest episode, which you haven't seen, which was much better, not great, but definitely a lot better. It was full on that we're continuing the plots and everything. So
who knows?
But anyway, it's kind of sad. You know, it's so funny. You'll hear a lot of people talking about why the show failed and everything, and a lot of them say, well, it's because who wants to see about the background making of rich people doing this and that? I'm going, and my thought is, That's such a stupid comment, because you could have just easily made the say, who wants to, or made the statement, who wants to see the backwards goings of a hospital? Who wants to see the back, you know, the back happenings of a police station? It's just a setting.
We kind of discussed this a long time ago, but I think more the point is, if you're saving lives as a doctor or a police officer, you can be a little more self-important about what you're doing instead of making a TV show. I think that's the the distinction. And I did kind of feel that in the first episode, right at the end when they're saying, you know, okay, I guess we're here now, and the camera's doing this extraordinarily dramatic circle. I'm making a circle motion with my finger. This extraordinary dramatic circle, it's kind of whooshing around them, and it's like, these guys are awesome. And it's like, well, no, they're writers and producers. They're cool. You're like putting them on this pedestal, but so I do see where that argument's coming from. And I think that actually was a hard line to write. I think the thing is, are they taking themselves too seriously? And it's hard to sympathize with characters that say, you know, get my Range Rover, you know, to the valet. And it's one thing if a doctor does it, because a doctor's saving a life, and you're like, that's so dramatic, versus, oh, they're writing a joke, and maybe they won't get the joke written in time for the show. So I can understand that, but...
Well, I don't know, and it's hard for me to look, others will say, well, they have this character who's supposedly a Christian, and I just don't believe it, and I don't know, I don't know if I believe it or not either. It just seems to be, I seem fine with it. But it just seems believable. And that's what's funny about the show is, and others I've heard say, why haven't they put the comedy at the forefront? It's about the show. We should be seeing really funny sketches. And I'm thinking, first of all, no, the way they did it is you see them in snippets. You don't see those flat out.
Yeah. I hate it when they show actual sketches from the show.
I agree. And then in terms of them being really funny, if you're trying to make it like Saturday Night Live, is 30% funny, you know, it's like,
right.
And when you see some of these people, you know, these are good actors and actresses, but you see their ongoing characters in there. And I find them wholly believable to the point that I'd like to see them on Saturday Night Live. The lead chick that Harriet, whatever her name is.
Yeah. Harriet.
She does a Juliet Lewis impression, which is really funny. She does a Holly Hunter thing that's just hilarious. And then this other guy does a Nicolas Cage impression and a Tom Cruise impression. I'm thinking these are really good. They're the kind of thing that I could see easily on Saturday Night Live. So I don't get that comment. I'm getting used to the fact that it's not going to be around anymore, and it hasn't totally gelled with me, but I wish it was stuck around. And a lot of people were saying that, you know, Friday Night Lights got just as bad ratings as this, and 30 Rock didn't get really good ratings either, but critics liked them and critics didn't like this one. And so they're saying it's that rare case. NBC just had nothing, no real hits other than maybe Heroes and stuff.
And to me, if that's the case, why not let the show, give it another year, invest and see if it goes any, if you don't have, because from my understanding is NBC also had the weakest display of new shows at the so-called upfronts this past couple weeks.
I agree. I think they were probably saying, well, because when we reintroduce the new season, you can always go with 30 Rock and others that didn't do that well, but you can say, you can really build up how much everybody loved it, how much everybody's waiting on it.
It's also the, you know, let's fire the coach and it's going to be awesome this year, every year.
Yeah.
It's like, well, these shows suck. They're awesome. And it's the same. Anyway, moving on. They officially announced that the next season of Battlestar Galactica is the last. I know you don't care, but...
I mean, how could they possibly be doing that?
What do you mean?
Getting rid of the ending a show that is generally agreed upon as the critics' favorite show.
You know what, though? If it wasn't so critically acclaimed, I don't think it would have gotten this far. In fact, Ronald Moore has said it wouldn't have gotten this far.
I agree, but it still strikes me as almost like a BBC type move of to end a show way before when people were more than willing to continue watching this show.
I think it has to do, I mean, it's,
is it
a lot of it has
to
do,
a lot of contracts coming up, or
I think it's mostly money, and the fact that it's, even though it's owned by, you know, NBC Universal, it's still the Science Fiction Channel network that's driving this, and they have a whole different budget situation than a normal network.
Are they going to go on and make movies or something afterwards?
I don't know. You know, they're kind of doing a half-assed movie between seasons now that sort of serves as a 2-hour movie.
Yeah.
I mean, TV movie. I can't remember if they said they were going to pursue that afterwards or not. I don't think so. But on the other hand, you know, the creators have a lot of control over saying, all right, if we're going to do it as the last season, then we know how to write it. We're going to write this as the last season. We're going to do a great job. You know, we'll be able to wrap things up the way we want instead of not. So, anyway, and they said, you know, it was a real struggle to even get the fourth season renewed. So, you know, I'm fine with that, and I'm really looking forward to it.
So last week I sat down and watched the entire 22-episode season of Heroes in a 30-hour time frame straight through.
A lot going on in your life.
Well, it was the holiday.
Oh, that's right.
And that particular day, I literally had nothing to do, and I really had the week before had been the single toughest week of my entire career at my job, and I wanted to sit and do nothing.
I totally get that.
So I watched it all through. It was great. It was awesome.
Yeah, it's very well done, and I did not want to get into that show because I hate getting into new TV, but
it was great. It was interesting because, you know, I watched it on NBC.com, and which I find to be a great format, and you have to sit through an ad for a break, not a bunch, but an ad. And the way they structure it there is typically, clearly a major advertiser will buy all the ads in a given day, usually, or something. Mm-hmm. So for the first day where I saw 17 episodes, I saw the same Orville Redenbacher ad. See, 17 times 5, so like 100 times.
God, I can't
imagine
that even Orville Redenbacher, that any advertiser would think it's a good idea, like, to hit you with the same ad over and over.
I don't think they sensed or thought that somebody would watch it 17 times.
Oh, I see what you're saying, because you're watching them all in a row.
Exactly.
Okay.
So I think if they had different technology, but at least right now is that. And then the next day it got different. And I like the show. And the thing I like the most about the show is it's clearly heavily influenced by X-Men and other stuff, but it took a long time.
Well, it's
relatively speaking, to really get into these guys as superheroes. And in fact, the whole season took a long time to get into that.
Well, it's kind of funny that Tim Kring, who's the executive producer, the head dude, is actually not that into comics.
Yeah.
And he kind of, there's a point where he was but there's a lot of people in the comics world working on the show.
Yep.
So that's where a lot of these influences come from. And there's a point where they're saying, you know, you should read this. It was a series called Rising Stars, written by J. Michael Straczynski, who was the head dude behind Babylon 5. And anyway, this Rising Stars had very, very similar plot elements in terms of normal people suddenly developing powers.
Yep.
And I think he read the back description, said, I can't read this. This is too close to what I'm trying to do, and I don't want to...
Yeah. Well, see, and that's kind of what I liked about it, because I'm not a comics guy at all either, and it had the feel of what I would like to see from superheroes, basically.
Right, and they've totally managed to straddle both worlds, pull in the nerds like me that are into comics and recognize, oh, okay, well, that's Wolverine's power, or that's so-and-so's power, and pull in someone who has no comics experience whatsoever.
Yep.
And it's fun. God, and the hero,
which one?
Hiro Nakamura.
Oh yeah, yeah, Hiro.
I'm trying to remember the actor's name.
I can't remember.
Takei. No, but George Takei is brilliant
good.
Father. That's great. But he does such a great. The actor who plays Hiro does such a great job. He does a fantastic job. And what's amazing to me is the guy worked at ILM and apparently still does on occasion. Because nobody else can use this program that he wrote as well as he can.
No kidding.
It's like, how brilliant do you have to be to have written your own special effects software? And, oh my God, that's it really makes you examine your own life. You're like, I'm such a loser. I do this one thing at my job. And anyway.
You know what I also like about the series is they don't feel compelled. Okay, it's a series. It's a special effects thing. So every show we're going to have our big special effect. Literally, it took 5 episodes in for something rather amazing to happen, and it was the moment when the political candidate flies up and zooms out his face, and it was so shocking, because you're, wow, somebody is actually flying, and then periodically they cut to some really, really good special effect. And you'd go, wow, it felt really organic here, and that I'm glad they don't pull something like that out and put a budget in. Okay, we need to spend $250,000 each episode on a special effect. It, I don't know, it just seemed organic. That said, they do have like an ongoing web comic along with it each episode, and I tried to read some of that and couldn't get into it at all. I'm just not into the comics, I guess. But so I like the show. I'm glad I sat through it. I wish NBC and everybody would do that with all their shows, considering I have no cable TV.
I actually thought of something interesting as I was coming over. I read an article by Jeremy Clarkson in the Top Gear magazine.
Oh, yeah, I read a couple by him. I found his articles to be as acerbic and funny as his shows.
It's on one level, he's hysterical. On the other, you kind of get the point that maybe he actually would be kind of a dick in person.
Is this the one where he's reviewing the new Honda?
No.
Okay.
He was discussing the previous season of Top Gear.
Yep.
Within the content, a lot of people complained because it was all wacky stuff and no actual car reviews. And he was pointing out, well, our normal episode allotment was cut down. Because of timing issues, what with Hammond having crashed.
Yep.
And they said, well, and when we had to choose what goes in the episodes, we chose the stuff that cost a lot of money to produce, which was all these wacky, funny bits. And he said, but here's the issue. It still got amazing ratings.
Yep.
And, you know, he brings up this point of they chose to do Hammond's return opposite the Big Brother, the final episode of Big Brother. And I think they beat Big Brother.
Yep.
And it was funny how during the whole episode they were kind of talking about it, and they said, you know, we'll discuss the crash at the end of the episode when the Big Brother big thing is going to happen. And, you know, they're winking and nodding, and it's all fun and games. And he said, but the rate, and we knew we'd have good ratings that night, but the ratings kept up, and it was because we're the BBC and we're not ratings dependent, we don't really care, but it's still cool, and we're really one of the most watched shows, you know. And I don't know if he says in the world. I don't know if he went off on that. But what struck me about that was he's relating it to Big Brother. And then a couple weeks ago, a friend of mine works at a company that makes back-end network infrastructure, sort of like Cisco, but not Cisco.
Yep.
And he was telling me that they are dealing with a TV network in Brazil. I can't remember if it was the actual Brazilian government or not. And they need to beef up their network infrastructure because of the show Big Brother, the Brazilian version. Whenever the show goes on, the show's website just gets assaulted because I guess they're all voting for who gets voted out of the house or whatever. And those two things kind of clicked together last week, and I was like, well, wait a minute. This show is insanely popular in Britain and in Brazil and who knows where else, to the point where they need to upgrade their network infrastructure and spend tons of money, because the company my guy works at makes really expensive stuff.
Yep.
And I was like, this is insane. And, you know, the show exists in America, but nobody cares.
When it came here, they were talking about, like, the Holland version, the Australian version, huge, and here it was just boring and dumb.
And I remember actually hearing a BBC report, because our NPR has BBC News at 7 p.m., so when I work late and I'm driving home at 7, I'll hear BBC News, and they're doing a story on an Australian Big Brother and whether or not one of the cast members' fathers had died, and the controversy was whether or not she should have been told because she wasn't told.
Yep.
I guess by the wishes of her remaining family.
And her wishes. When they sign up for that show, they tell them, this is what's going to happen. You know that going in.
And it's just so amazing because nobody in America gives a crap. I don't give a crap. And normally you can you feel bad that Americans aren't more involved in something. You know, it's too bad that Americans don't watch more world news, or it's too bad that Americans don't participate in this. But I'm like, I'm proud that Americans don't watch Big Brother.
Yeah, but you know what?
We'll watch Paradise Island.
No, Paradise Island died after a short time.
Oh, I know, but still.
No, it's American Idol. It's such an enormous hit, and admittedly,
there's different versions in countries.
I know, I agree, but it is. But it's the biggest success over here, even bigger than UK pop stars, certainly bigger than Canadian Idol. And boy, there's nothing weirder than going up to Canada and seeing big billboard ads for Canadian Idol, and you look and go, oh, it's American Idol, and then you look close and realize, oh, it's like a different black dude than Randy. Oh, it's not Paula. It's somebody looking like Paula. It's weird. They literally hired kind of lookalikes for their ads. But yeah, it's that. That's our equivalent of Big Brother. It's bigger here than anywhere else on the planet.
I don't know. I will still take my small semblance of pride that we don't need to see Big Brother.
D'accord, mon ami.
What else do I have? Oh, do you ever watch that show Deadliest Catch?
You know, our buddy Mark watches it religiously.
And it's a show about crab fishermen and up in the Bering Sea.
And he did that job, and he used
to... Did he?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I had no idea.
You remember the guy that in the first season, or like the first, it wasn't a season, but they showed, they had like a documentary that they based around it. And he's on these shows. He's the fisherman that was inventing the little lighted thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay,
so that guy, Mark, spent, you know... several or a season with and said he's like the most appalling guy on the planet. He could not stand this guy. But yeah, Mark knows some of those people, and so he's infatuated with it. To me, it's depressing often. It's a funny show, but it's depressing. So anyway, to answer your question is, I have seen it, but I haven't seen it recently.
It's really interesting because it's one of these things where it starts out as like a one-off or a couple of one-offs.
Yep.
That they show on the Discovery Channel about crab fishermen and how it's like the most dangerous job in America because so many people die from it. And it's fascinating because you see this whole different work. You know, it's the exact opposite of what most people do. It's the exact opposite of a cube job.
Yep.
It's intense physical work while you're on a heaving boat. A wave could come over at any time, knock you overboard, and kill you.
Yes.
Because it's insane working conditions.
Yep.
But you make, you know, $30,000 over the course of a month.
Yep.
And it's really interesting in these personalities and characters, which, you know, clearly someone that has the mentality to be a crab fisherman probably isn't someone you work next to. Our friend Mark being an opposite example of that.
Yeah, but that was 20 years ago.
But still. I mean, it's usually these rough guys.
Yep.
And it's fascinating, and it turned out to be compelling enough to make a series out of it.
Yep.
And, you know, and then they sort of couch it in terms of who catches the most crab, which is kind of silly because they're a quota system. But
I know, they're always putting together some... They have to have some tension or competition.
Like last season or this season, whatever it is, it's like there's a bet amongst the captains who has the biggest per-pot crab average. And you're just kind of like, you know what? You don't need to invent some bull-honky joke. But the whole reason I bring this up is one of the boats is called the Northwestern, which is... And I knew this, based in Seattle.
Almost all those boats are based in Seattle. That's why Mark knows them. They start out here and go up to there.
Well, I wasn't aware of that. I kind of assumed because...
All down there in Ballard, right under the bridge.
Right. Well, I knew the Northwestern was, and my wife and I were... My friends had a CD release party in one of the Ballard clubs on Friday night. And so we were walking down there, and we were just walking around Market Street. And we get to the end, to the point where you can see the one, like, that's the Northwestern. Yep. And it was in dry dock in Ballard, having its hull sanded and repainted. We're just, it's like
a little movie star.
It's so weird. Exactly. It's like the Seattle version of seeing a movie star. It's like, I know that boat. I saw that boat not 2 days ago.
Wow.
It was really, and you realize that, and you're like, wow, that's so cool. And then you take a step back. Why is it cool that I can see a boat? How dumb am I that brings joy to my life?
Oh, it's just like when you're going to a car show and you see the Batman car or something like that.
I mean, actually, I think I got a bigger charge out of this than I would have out of the Batman car. Partly because it's a subtle thing. Like, not everybody's going to know about the Northwestern. Yeah. You have to be, like, in the club. You have to be cool enough to watch this obscure Discovery Channel show.
Did you see the before the... movie knocked up. Did you see?
I know exactly what you're going to say.
They're going to talk about Ice Road Truckers, this new TV show.
That's on the History Channel,
of all things.
Yeah, that was actually on my list.
It looked cool. It looked great. They're doing and driving across.
Well, I've read stories about this, and basically it's in these hard environments where, like, in the northern bits of Canada where we've got mines, they're driving big rigs up on these incredibly treacherous ice roads over frozen lakes to deliver supplies and whatnot.
Yeah.
And there was an article in the latest Car and Driver about it, as a matter of fact. And I go in, and there's this promo for a series about these truckers. And
Well, they clearly have been watching Deadliest Catch.
Exactly. It's the exact same genre.
Now the preview I saw was really exciting. That said, I somehow sense that if it's like a 9-episode series, it's going to be focusing more on the mundane aspects than the...
Well, I don't understand how you get a series out of it.
I don't either.
I can understand a couple of hours, a couple of one-offs, and like, this is it, but... You know, I don't understand, you know, following a trucker to be near as compelling as following a crabbing boat.
50 high-def cameras. That's what they're
I mean, I understand that it's beautiful environments and that there's peril, but I don't understand that there's enough varied peril. It's like, oh, my God, we might sink through, but that's...
No, that's what
like
I'm saying.
We might freeze, we might sink through, but that's it.
That's why I think it's going to be mostly mundane, and it's going to be that movie or that show is going to rise and fall on the success of the editors. So
fascinating.
But it looked interesting. When I was born, my dad was stationed in Fort Greeley, Alaska, and if you've ever seen there's the common joke in movies like some guy screws up. And then the army threatens, or they station him to basically the North Pole, the coal thing. Well, that was where my dad was stationed. It is the cold weather proving grounds for the U.S. military. When I was born on March 30th, 1968, it was basically like 70 degrees below zero there. You could not go outside for more than like 10 seconds without almost getting frostbite. You take a cup of water, throw it out there, it instantly freezes. That my dad, now he wasn't one of the people testing it. My dad's job was to blow crap up. But there was other people, that's what they would do, is they would go out there and test like trucks to see how they last in the snow. Because basically they were preparing for a land war with the Soviet Union.
Right, right.
And they wanted to make sure it worked. And it was funny, and I always used to joke about it, because my dad, even though he was up there, he was not one of those people having to suffer in the cold because he blew stuff up. But I met somebody who, oh yeah, my dad was stationed up there too. And then I realized he was one of those misfits that was literally... He was sent up there, and they would test sleeping bags and other stuff.
Oh.
So that was their job, to see how cold they got in sleeping bags and stuff.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, I digress, but when I saw that Ice Road Truckers, I thought, well, that might get at least a little bit of a feel for what it was like when my dad and I were, or when I was like a tiny little baby and they were living up there.
So moving on to video games.
Yep.
Couple different things I have in my list.
I saw you playing Lego Star Wars.
I picked How's up. That? Well, First, I want to relate the anecdote of picking it up, because it went, as we discussed in our last one, which is as of yet unpublished.
Yep.
The Lego Star Wars went platinum, which means it's considered a greatest hit, and now it's $20.
Yep.
So I thought that...
It's only $20?
It's $20.
Oh, sweet. I'm definitely going to pick that up.
So I had kind of a depressing day, I had a bad day at work, and I was like, I'll solve it by buying a video game. Very American. But I figured I didn't want to spend an hour driving around trying to find it. So I'll drive by Fred Meyer on my way home. Mm-hmm. And if they have it, great. And if not, oh well. That's the amount of time I'm willing to invest in it. So I go by Fred Meyer. And I go in their electronics department. All their games are behind glass.
Yeah.
And so I kind of look, and I was like, they're all sideways. That doesn't look like the platinum version. Crap. All right, fine. I'll check just to make sure that it's not, but whatever. And I go grab, because God forbid anybody wants to help you, you have to go grab somebody that's restocking something.
Yep.
Can you please, I want to look and see if this is the right game. And he pulls it out, and it's not the platinum version, but it had been priced at $20.
Oh, good.
And I cannot tell you how excited I was. I was like, oh my God, you've exceeded my expectations. I was so prepared to be upset and pissed off.
Nice.
But you actually did the correct thing. You're not going to sell a $50 game when a $20 version's coming out, so you repriced the existing game at $20? That's exactly what you were supposed to do.
Nice.
I can't believe it. So, yeah, I picked up Lego Star Wars, and I've been playing it, and it's very fun, extremely worth $20, great value. The only thing is, it's weird because it was an early game and you could tell they hadn't quite figured out how to set up the achievements yet.
Oh.
So it's, you've completed this mission, here's an achievement, which is pretty, they all do that, but there's nothing in between. The in-between achievements are, you've completed 20% of the game, 40%, 60%, 80%.
So it's not really an achievement as much as you're just plugging along the narrative.
Right, and I think there's some weird bonus achievements at the end, but they're not... Games nowadays will give you weird bonus achievements sprinkled throughout, and this game doesn't. So it's really a ton of fun and highly recommended. And then over Memorial Day, when I was car camping, somebody brought a Wii. So I have had my opportunity now to play with a Wii.
Somebody went car camping with a Wii?
Well, it's...
For God's sakes,
we have friends that have... their parents have property on Big Lake and Mount Vernon.
Yeah.
And so they have a house there.
Oh, okay.
And so usually the friends gather and pitch tents in their front yard, which is basically the lakefront.
Oh, okay.
And so when, you know, you can go into the house and there's a TV, and that's where the Wii was. I was actually pretty disappointed.
Really?
I mean, because he had the Wii Sports, and he had this weird monster truck game, and he had a...
I just want to play Wii Manhunt. I want to play a murder simulation device.
Did not have that. Did not have the Red Steel. Did not have a gun game. But I found the control scheme to be... I mean, it was inventive, but it was not precise enough for me.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, it's cool that you're doing this weird motion to paddle a canoe or something, but it's not precise enough.
I suspect it would drive me nuts, because even going to the Xbox... after using, you know, mouse keyboard, which is extremely precise, killed me. It took me the longest time. In fact, I couldn't even get into Saints Row because I just couldn't get used to the thing. And finally, after just forcing myself through Gears of War, I got used to the whole scheme. But what you're saying about the Wii, that thing, it would kill me.
The graphics were horrid.
I know, that's the other thing.
I mean, I understand they're supposed to be horrid, but... I mean, because I know it's basically
and they're focusing on gameplay, and that's what it shows what's real about. I'm going, really good graphics.
It's a tarted up GameCube, but the graphics were actually Sega Genesis level.
Wow.
Which we could tell because one of the things is you can play Sega Genesis games on it, kind of like arcade. So, like, you could buy Sonic the Hedgehog.
So it's like an emulator?
Basically, and so one of the guys was playing Sonic the Hedgehog, so you could go between looking at that, which, how old is that game? 15 years old?
Yeah.
And you compare Sonic the Hedgehog to new Wii game, and Sonic looked better.
Wow.
And you're just like, I understand. And yeah, and so you get into the gameplay, and it's not exact, and you're swearing at it because it's not doing what you want it to do. You know, that being said, you know, the party games were fun and were easy to pick up, and you were having fun with three other people, but... It wasn't enough for me, and you can't understand why, you know, that's the gotta have it system.
Yeah.
You know, and my friend Randy, who plays video games more than I do, and is I would think a stricter connoisseur, if you will, was much more forgiving and said, you know, these are all first generation games. You know, they'll get better as they go along. And I said, clearly that's the case. But Wii Sports is also a first-party game.
Yeah.
It's like, if Nintendo can't develop a better thing to use their system, who else is?
Yeah.
Anyway, I fully expect later games to both look better and operate better, but to me, they did not do a good enough job with the first-generation games for me to be interested in the next generation of games, which really surprised me. I thought they would. So that's the Wii. That's my Wii report.
never even touched one yet. Not much of an interest. My brother has a PlayStation 3. The only thing we played on it was it was a DVD. It wasn't even it was a DVD game. So that's the only thing we even did on it was the Amazing Race DVD game. And they got all mad at me because I, you know, answered every question, so nobody else got to play. But other than that, I don't know. I'm really good at those trivia things. But other than that, I haven't even played. Actually, no, I did see them play. He has one game. I can't remember what game it was. I don't know. It didn't look anything different in an Xbox.
Well, yeah, so far, like, Resistance is good, and I guess there's a dirt racing game that came out, Moto Madness, I think, and that's supposed to be good.
First of all, that PlayStation, that's an ugly-looking machine. I'll tell you that right now. I think the Xbox looks good.
I think it would have been... I think that shape would have been better if it was smaller, but when that shape is as big as it is...
It's like a turntable. It looks like... I don't know. It looks weird, but... So have you played Forza yet, or the demo Forza?
Actually, I did play. I played the demo at a friend's house, and then last night I was at another friend's house and did some arcade racing. They've got the whole wheel set up. Mm-hmm. Pretty good. I haven't gotten the game yet because, A, I'm in the process of
trying it's to out, set, right?
Yeah, it came okay. out on Tuesday.
Okay.
And my whole circle of, you know, video game car nut friends, Forza's like, oh!
I know.
They go insane over it. I enjoyed the first one. I will get the second one, but because at any moment when I'm home in the evenings, we might have to leave so that a real estate agent can show our house, so it's really hard to get into a, you know, like a 10-lap race.
I'll tell you, I played the demo, and I came in first place, the first game I played in the demo, and I immediately thought, this is the worst game on the planet.
No.
Because, well, no, I was going to say, I've never had one where I immediately was really good. Well, that said, played about 20 games after that and could hardly complete a single race without getting so far behind and so crashing. Somehow, the first time out, because I was cautious and I was going into it, somehow I managed to win the damn thing. And after that, I couldn't. But I saw all the different, you can trim this and adjust that. That is so anathema to me. I want to like drive over the power up that gives me 10% extra power.
Right, and it's clearly not that. This is a simulation game, not PGR.
And it looks good, although it's funny. It looks incredibly good, like especially if you take a quick snapshot and other stuff. For whatever reason, driving it doesn't feel that much better than anything else to me in terms of looks. It is great. But it does, but it doesn't feel as much great, and I'm beginning to wonder if anything's ever going to feel super great, because it's probably the best graphics I've ever seen in a car. But for some reason, it still didn't totally look as great.
Yeah, the TV I was playing it on last night, the bulb was kind of dying, so it was hard to get a.
That's what's happening to this thing too.
I'll get a. I have a friend that works at Microsoft, so I was waiting for it to show up in the Microsoft store because the games are $25 there, and I was basically waiting to pay half price for it. But the trade off with that is it takes a little while for the games to show up in their internal store.
Yep.
So I have to trade off 2 or 3 weeks of not being able to play it, which because
everybody
I'm
else
kinda,
gets good at it, and then you're
oh behind. I'm of my clique of friends that play it, I'm the worst anyway, so that's. That's not a big detractor. That being said, I was in Best Buy yesterday because we were kind of killing time, and I was reading through the Forza 2 strategy guide, mainly just reading about tuning because I'm not good at tuning. My friends are. They will spend hours tweaking ride height and spring settings and aero, and they're good at it, and I'm generally not. I'll do it a little, but because I don't have a wheel and they all have wheels, they can do a much better job of actually feeling the subtle differences of how a car is behaving when you do those changes, and I can't. So anyway, I'm in Best Buy, and one guy comes through, and he wants to buy Forza 2. And so he brings the Best Buy idiot over. Why do they all have clipboards now?
I don't know.
I don't understand that. Are they supposed to look more helpful because they have a clipboard? Are they taking customer satisfaction surveys?
I don't know, but they got to do something to be more helpful, and if it takes clipboards, I'm all for it.
Morons. Anyway, so the guy says, oh, well, let me go check in back. So he goes to check in back for Forza 2, and then a second guy comes up and says, well, is he checking to see if they've got any Forza 2? Yeah. Anyway, the guy comes back. They don't have any. I don't understand that. It's the week of a hot... It's a fairly hot game. They've been promoting the heck out of it.
Yep.
How can you possibly be sold out of a game? I can understand being sold out of a car. I don't understand being sold out of a game. They know it's going to do well. Maybe they don't know it's going to do super well. But because it costs so little to manufacture these things.
I know, and you know the lifetime of the product. You know pretty much it's going to sell X units. There's no reason to just give as many out
the
there as
the only reason
necessary.
I can think of is that they on purpose want to get people to pre-order games, but I refuse to pre-order games. I think that's retarded.
It absolutely is. I want to pay it when I want to pay it. I don't want this baloney.
I don't understand.
Ask them if one more time I walk into a GameStop and they ask me if I want to pre-order Grand Theft Auto 4, I'm going to slap the guy.
Yeah, they're asking me a year ahead of time.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. That's...
And there's going to be a million copies of that thing out there on the day it comes out. And if there isn't, I'll wait a day.
Yeah,
my life will go on.
Well, but maybe it will be sold out. It's completely retarded that Grand Theft Auto 4, which will be more popular than Forza 2, how can you not just flood the market with those stupid things? What's it cost to make one? A nickel?
Well, they know. They just want to make sure you're buying it at their store. If they were smart... Yeah, I mean, I don't know if they do this, but GameStop, or any place, they would make you pre-order it, but as... Not pre-ordering it, but you could put down, like they do at GameStop, a $5 deposit, which guarantees you like $2 off or something. That's what they should do. Because what they're essentially doing is trying to get you to pay, buy a game at their place rather than somewhere else.
Well, right. I totally get that. But why, you shouldn't, I mean, I understand why the retailers want to do that. Why, I don't understand why the companies, the game publishers, aren't making enough copies. Are they doing it on purpose to help the retailers?
I agree.
And that could be it, because the retailers are looking at Xbox Live and basically they're looking at download services and realizing their raison d'etre is going away.
Yeah.
There is, I don't know how long it's going to take, but there clearly will be no need to buy... Why buy a disc game? And this is a separate argument from movies, because there's no extras on games, at least not now. Maybe it'll be a bonus later, but there's no user experience difference between purchasing a game and downloading it over Xbox Live.
No, 100% of all the games that have extras, it's through a service like Xbox Live or Steam something else.
And I understand that there's already Steam and Valve and whatnot doing that, but in terms of console...
But it's all through... Yeah, but even with Xbox Live, it's 100% all extras. They have them, but they are later, and it's download and pay for the right.
But I'm just talking about downloading itself.
Yep.
I understand it's been happening in the PC world for a while, but for console gaming, there is absolutely no user difference between downloading it and having a disc, other than having a hard drive big enough to hold them all.
Yep.
And I honestly don't have a feel for how much space an Xbox 360 game would take up.
Well, they're on DVD, so it's a max of 3.7 gigabytes.
Okay, so clearly you need bigger hard drives than currently exist.
The current ones kind of suck, but if everybody started moving towards the, what is those, 160 gigabyte things or whatever, what they need to do is Xbox set up the thing where if you download it, you can always re-download it, right?
Yes. They definitely did that with movies and TV shows.
Okay, so they almost certainly would do the same with a game thing.
I assume that they did that in case something happens to your hard drive and it's corrupt and you need to re-download it. I don't know if they have it set up the same way as movies where you can delete it on purpose to save space and then re-download it.
I'm going to assume they would if they're trying to go for the service, because the benefits of them moving towards that, publishers, distributors, they take so much out of the cost of, Best Buy takes so much and the distributors take so much that Microsoft just says, why are we paying them when we could keep all of that money through us? And basically, the way people play games is you might be playing a couple games at the same time, but you're not going to be playing Saints Row and Grand Theft Auto and all these others at the same time. There's no downside to going, I'll delete that off to get this other one, as long as you can always get it again.
I think, to me right now, the two limitations are...
I can't even find my Saints Row disc. I've been wanting to play... Oh, do you have it?
No. One I have not borrowed.
Okay, so that's one I can't find the thing, and I'm thinking, damn, I wish if it was on Xbox, I could just download the dang thing.
No, it's bigger hard drives are the issue, and that the new larger hard drive addresses that mostly. I don't know if it's quite big enough yet. But then even high-speed bandwidth, even DSL and cable, I don't think are quite fast enough yet to really satisfy.
Yeah, but here's how every game in the world, they can figure that out. You develop the game with it in mind,
right,
that you download the first level and the first stuff in 30 gigs. And so you can be playing it while you're not 30 gigs, 30 megs.
You just need enough data to play the first level, and then it in the background downloads the rest of the game. And I know that's happened at least once for, I think, a PC game.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, that happens all the time for PC. Steam or Valve, some of the Half-Life games.
I thought whatever I'd heard recently had made more of a big deal about that.
Well, I think, didn't Major Nelson or somebody talk about that?
That's probably where I heard it. Maybe there was an actual Xbox 360 game.
Yeah. It was one of these games that had pushed the 50 megabyte limit to its very core, but the way they were describing it was, it was one of the marketplace games, and the way they were describing it was you could start playing it almost immediately because it's the first level kind of thing.
Yeah.
But
I don't know. So, yeah. It'll be really interesting to see what happens. I think eventually clearly that's the way it's going to go, mm-hmm. but I don't know what GameStop or Electronics Boutique or any of these places do to fight that. Do they enter into a deal with Microsoft and everybody else saying, you need to use us as a middleman, because if you don't use us as a middleman in the future, we're going to screw you right now, or because you need us right now. I don't know how that works out. Well, right now they need the retailers.
Yep.
Microsoft and Sony and the game publishers. The infrastructure for downloads isn't robust enough to handle everything yet. So right now they need the retailers, and the retailers can squeeze them right now to come to some sort of accommodation for 3, 4, 5 years down the road when they look and see their own obsolescence. If they can swing some sort of deal now where they're involved, which I don't know.
I think they should start. Just start planning for the day that they won't be part of the.
I hate Electronics Boutiques and those places. I don't like Best Buy, but that's just because the people that work there are all not paid enough to know anything.
What sucks about all these things is it will. The thing that sucks about a lot of this stuff, like it does with it did with CDs and everything else, is it will effectively eliminate the notion that you have a thing and you can do what you want with it. And if I want to give it to a friend, if I want to sell it at a store for
that's
used
true.
Stuff,
it does.
It's the same thing. That's the same problem with CDs. They're basically you buy them. And even with the new Apple, digital rights management free thing, which I think is a great move. And I think what they're doing is absolutely great. You're basically saying, you can't give this away or sell this to somebody. Even the DRM free, it's got your embossed, user ID into that song, even though you can give it away. It's, it's a changing world where suddenly we've given up rights that we've traditionally had.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that shakes out. I need to skedaddle.
Okay, dude.
So there were no emails.
Of course not, because there was no show, which is my fault.
What?
There was no show. I still haven't put the damn thing up, so.
Oh, I thought you were saying you haven't been recording this whole time.
No.
I was about to throw a microphone at your head.
Definitely recording.
There have been no emails, but if you wish to contact us, of course, since you probably haven't seen a show in a while, you think we're dead. Mm-hmm. You guys rock at mustardayonnaise.com. I am Matt.
I am Richard.
Thank you for listening.